There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines and top debate. This is The Grill, live from Barasti on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Very good afternoon. Welcome back to the show. Chris McCarty, Dale Gordon, the former Norwich, West Ham, Rangers midfielder, and Mark Archer. How do I introduce you, Mark?
Just all-round good guy.
All-round good guy, Mark Archer. That is what it is. Yes, you are listening to The Grill. We're live down here at Barasti. Beautiful summer's day. Summer's day, it's not summer. It's October, for goodness sake. It's just I'm a Scot. This weather is absolutely beautiful. It is a fantastic place to watch all of your football across the day. There is over 20 big screens down here at Barasti. So even if it's not football, you can watch another sporting event. They have all your needs catered for down here at Barasti. There is a huge crowd in, and it's not to watch cricket, it's not to watch tennis, they're all in,
to see you,
Gordon,
Chris.
To see you, I think, my man. You played at the highest level of football, not me, but they are in for the big game this afternoon. It is Liverpool against Manchester United, and we're just seeing the replay again. David De Gea, cometh the hour, cometh the man. That is a huge save for Manchester United.
Massive, massive moment in the game, I think, Chris. You mentioned before the break there, you know, hopefully we'll come back and there'll be a goal. Well, we won't get any closer than that. It was Firmino on the left-hand side, actually, taking the fullback on, dropped his shoulder, just drags the ball on his left-hand side, places the ball across, and it was Joe Matip, of all players, you know, the big centre-half who's found himself just outside the six-yard box, gets a really good side foot volley onto it, but David De Gea was unbelievable, not with his hands, but with his feet. I mean, we know that obviously he's fantastic with his hands, but he's used his feet there to keep the ball out of the net to make it 1-0 to Liverpool. It hasn't happened. We're from the rebound as well, though, Chris. It came back to Salah as well. It should have done a lot better as well with his finish. He just curled it, just shaved the post on his effort there, all in the space of about 2 minutes. So Liverpool are now on the front foot. Mourinho will be looking to hopefully get into 0-0 at half time, just to obviously get his troops get together again. But at the moment, Liverpool 0, Manchester United 0.
Yeah, I've got to say, I think Liverpool have been marginally the better team over the course of the 40 minutes. Jose Mourinho prowling the touchline, as is Jurgen Klopp at this moment in time. And Mourinho, I think the message he's trying to get through to his players is to just keep the ball. They've been giving it away sloppily. Liverpool, the high-octane press that always Jurgen Klopp teams bring to proceedings, that has ruffled feathers with Manchester United. They've not been able to slip into a pattern. They're looking to go direct into Romelu Lukaku. But as Dale says, 38 minutes on the clock, Liverpool 0, Manchester United 0.
Just to go back to that save by David De Gea, it's a world-class save. He's basically anticipated where the first-time strike would go from about 7 or 8 metres out. He knows he's not going to save it with his hands. He's, as the players struck the ball, he's put out that big left foot, and it's just basically hit the foot. It was almost an open goal. It hit it either side of De Gea, and it is a goal for Liverpool. But De Gea, anticipating to the prime, has put that big left foot out, and he's got the lucky deflection. It hasn't gone straight to a Liverpool player. Mo Salah couldn't do the job following up, and it's 5 minutes to go to half time. And I think Mourinho has been putting out a few instructions from the sideline, but same as you said just recently, Dale, he'll be happy going into halftime at 0-0.
Yeah, I think, you know, coming to 40 minutes, but, you know, 5 minutes before the halftime break now, what Mourinho doesn't want to do is concede. You know, how many goals have we seen scored in, say, like, you know, injury time in each half? And I think, you know, he'd be relatively pleased with his performance from his team so far going forward. Defensively, look quite solid. I think Chris said that Liverpool have probably had the majority of the game. That's obvious that's going to happen. Liverpool are at home. Yeah. You know, they do have a really, really frightening three up front as well, with their movement as well. But I think Mourinho, you know, after that particular instance as well, with the chance that Liverpool had, that will obviously raise that, the crowd, will give the crowd a lift as well. But, you know, that little man Coutinho on the ball as well, he's a little magician, isn't he, in midfield and that, and he's sort of like, you know, he's basically ticking all the boxes.
And that's it, undoubtedly. So I think that's the biggest issue United have at this moment in time, that Coutinho starting left in the starting 11, and we're just seeing another effort. Mo Salah again testing, warming the hands of David De Gea. We saw Coutinho stationed out there wide in the left-hand side, but just in the last 10 minutes, he's wandering in field, he's picking up little pockets of space, and right now Matic and Herrera, because they've got Can, Henderson and Wijnaldum to contend with. No one's picking up Coutinho, and he's starting to get on the ball. He's starting to look dangerous in that final third for Liverpool. But we'll keep you up to date with that. I am conscious an awful lot more sport going on at this moment in time. So let us get an update on all things. Well, let's talk rugby. We were in conversation on Thursday evening with Sir Graham Henry, as we were talking about a little earlier. And it's a busy old day of rugby over in Europe. It's a Champions Cup arch. Early kickoff, Leinster.
Yeah, early kickoff is in Dublin. It's the opening weekend of the Champions Cup, formerly known as the Heineken Cup. It's the European Club Championship, the Premier Club Rugby Championship in Europe. Round one this weekend. I'll just give you a quick result from last night. It was Ulster kicked off their Champions Cup campaign with a 19-9 victory over Wasps. Charles Pillitau, the ex-All Black, was the star. He set up both tries for Ulster against his former team, Wasps. So Ulster off to a winning start. The early kickoff today is in Dublin. Leinster at home to big-spending top 14 side Montpellier. It's 10 minutes gone. It's Leinster nil, Montpellier nil at this stage. Four other matches today in Pool 1 at the Stoop in southwest London. Harlequins will host the French side La Rochelle. Sandy Park at Exeter, they will be at home to Glasgow. Racing 92 and will take on Leicester Tigers, that's in Paris. And then at the Rec in the West Country, Bath will take on the Italian outfit Benetton. There's also matches in the European Challenge Cup, but 10 minutes gone in the first Rugby Champions Cup kickoff today. It's Leinster nil, Montpellier nil.
Just very quickly, Archie, it's a topic that we've perhaps not discussed enough, to be honest, away from the Champions Cup, but sticking with rugby. What's your early assessment of the two South African teams who have moved into the Guinness Pro 14? We saw the Cheetahs, a slow start. They've finally picked up some points and look as if, that certainly on their own park, that they're a beating for anyone. It's not been the case for the Southern Kings, who absolutely look out of their depth in it. Your thoughts on it so far from what you've seen?
It's tough. Again, we talked about just in the first hour of the show, experiments in sport, trying to expand your horizons, do things differently. And this scene's seen the Pro 12 add the two South African franchises, of course. The Cheetahs based in Bloemfontein, the Southern Kings based in Port Elizabeth. Oh. Those two teams were basically kicked out of the Super Rugby. They've been fitted into a new Pro 14, and they've both struggled, Chris. Both teams have been particularly harsh away from home when they've had to travel over to Europe, whether it be to Wales, to Ireland, to Scotland. They've really struggled to make any impact. The Cheetahs at home at Bloemfontein at altitude, they've been different. They won a couple of matches there, so they've been tough to break down when the European teams have travelled to Bloemfontein. But the Southern Kings, who have been one of the worst teams in Super Rugby, have really struggled in both formats of the competition, Chris, away from home. So it's been a pretty tough start for those South African franchises. Again, the Cheetahs better at home, particularly at altitude in Bloemfontein, a tougher proposition for teams travelling for that one-off match from Europe. And the Southern Kings have just been poor home and away so far today.
Yeah, let us turn our attention back to the football, because there's been a flashpoint at Anfield. Manchester United at Liverpool today. Liverpool in red, United in grey. We're just watching replays here. Potential stamp there, Dale?
I don't think so, Chris. I think it's just the challenge that went in. I think Lukaku's momentum is just obviously with his feet just going forwards. Obviously, maybe lost his balance a little bit. Doesn't look that nasty. I think the two managers obviously on the touchline realised that as well. But unbelievable what happened as well. We mentioned about Manchester United making sure they're going at 0-0. They just had an unbelievable chance as well on 43 minutes. It was United's little intricate play just on the edge of the box. It fell to Lukaku in the centre of the goal on his favoured left foot as well. And as he struck it, Mignolet, it was a nice height for the goalkeeper and he just parried it away. But I think that Lukaku will be bitterly disappointed there. And obviously, just looking at the replay as well, I may have to swallow my words there. It did look a bit nasty as well with
the stamp.
That little stamp,
we'll see. We'll get some more replays of that one. But Romelu Lukaku, a wonderful opportunity to open the scoring. So that's a great opportunity from Liverpool. Joel Matip, just a few moments ago, the cross came in from Roberto Firmino. Fantastic save from David De Gea. And Simon Mignolet called upon, and he comes up with a save.
Yeah, he was as well. And we touched on Coutinho, the importance of Coutinho. Now, you can see the reason why Jurgen Klopp did not want to sell him to Barcelona. You know, you mentioned that the game has now settled down. And what is good, the intelligence of a player, Chris, is that he's picking little pockets now in the United, just in the holes, just, you know, behind the striker as well. And I think that he's so central to Liverpool, what happens makes them tick as well. And he had a little chance as well on the left-hand side, just cutting off left-hand side, a little bit of trickery again, and just pinged the ball across, and De Gea just dropped to one side and obviously gathered the ball as well. So it's the game has now settled and seems to be opening up, but we're now coming up to half time. I think, like I said, Mourinho will be a lot more happier, the two managers, to go in at 0-0.
Yeah, I think United are going to have to look at that. Coutinho getting far too much space. Good opening half this. We're just seeing the replays now of that massive chance for Manchester United, and Dale's right, really good intricate play involving Lukaku and Martial on the edge of the box. The ball then falls to Lukaku on his favoured left foot as well. Tries to open his body, tries to bend it into that far corner. Simon Mignolet though, standing up, staying big, and produces a save that you'd expect him to make. That is just the halftime whistle blown over at Anfield. It is Liverpool 0, Manchester United 0. You are listening to The Grill. We are live down here at Barasti. Beautiful day down here. A huge crowd as well down for this early kickoff. Worth marking your card as well. We have got not one but two fixtures coming up from 6 p.m. Our featured match is Crystal Palace against Chelsea, and then the late kickoff from Vicarage Road. It is Watford against Arsenal. Stay tuned then. You're listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. You're listening to The Grill. We're with you all the way through until 6 o'clock.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Yeah, we'll get to your texts in just a second. An awful lot of you getting in touch on 4001 to have your say on the changes to cricket. An awful lot of people out there as well proposing different changes in order to keep cricket. It's not so much relevant, because cricket will always be relevant to an awful lot of people, Arch. It's about just keeping it so that it's still attracting more fans, because it's so competitive.
Yeah, look, people don't have 5 days of free time in a row to go watch test match cricket anymore like maybe they did a decade or two ago. So it's about trying to compact test matches into a shorter space of time. It's about to look at the options of day-night, so people can go watch a final session after work. It's trying to find ways to keep the crowds interested and keep audiences and the media all interested in test cricket. You know, we've seen the advent in the last decade of T20 cricket, how exciting and innovative that's been, and it's changed the game. It's sped up traditional 4-day and 5-day formats of cricket. So what the administrators are doing is trying to find ways to keep test cricket moving with the times, keeping looking at ways to make it more exciting, more appealing to the masses, keep it a good television sport, and just see how things develop. So indeed, let's applaud administrators where they're trying to be innovative and find some new ways to keep the sport at the forefront. It's a competitive entertainment and sporting space these days.
Well, one other sport that has got a bit of an identity crisis, and I say a bit due to the fact that they appreciate that they need to change, it is the world of golf. Keith Pelley, the European Tour Chief Executive, he is someone who is very much seen as a visionary, someone who wants to drive change. European Tour coming to the boil now, heading, of course, the season-ending race to Dubai, DP World Tour Championship, November 16th to the 19th. We will be there throughout those 4 days. Where are they this weekend, the European Tour boys?
It's the Italian Open, just out of Milan. Monza, in fact, where they, of course, do the Formula One race. And of course, as you say, Chris, all eyes are turning to Jumeirah Golf Estates for the DP World Championship. Only, what is it, a month away?
Yeah.
Month or so away. So a lot of players jockeying for position to get in the top 60 in the European Tour rankings to qualify for that big end of season event. Italian Open, round 3 underway today. It's an Englishman, Matt Wallace. Don't know much about him. He's ranked in the world 150. Fair to say I've got not much of his bio, but one player who has had a really good 12 months is the Englishman Tommy Fleetwood. He's 8 under par today. He shot 63, and of course he broke the course record at Carnoustie only a week ago at the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship there. So one player who is finding form. He is up to 17 in the world. Of course, he won the Abu Dhabi Golf Championship, HSBC Golf Championship, earlier in the season. So he's finding form. So it's Matt Wallace at 14 under par. He's only just played 4 holes today. He has a one-shot lead from the clubhouse leader, Tommy Fleetwood, who's back at 13 under par. Tyrrell Hatton, who's been in good form as well, because he, of course, won the Dunhill Links Championship last week. He's having a great week again. He's 4 under par today after rounds of 69, 64, 13 under par. And Marcus Fraser, the ever-consistent Aussie, is also at 13 under par. So lots of players, again, jockeying for position. It's Matt Wallace with a one-shot lead over Tommy Fleetwood and Tyrrell Hatton. It's a three-way tie, three players from England at the top of the leaderboard.
There's a theme developing on the show. It is all about innovation. We've been talking about that over the course of the past hour or so, certainly with the cricket, now with golf. Got to get your thoughts, and I'll get your thoughts on this as well, Dale. You don't really need to know golf to have an opinion on this particular story. News out of the Omega Dubai Desert Classic this week that Paige Spirinac is coming back to become the official starter for the men's Omega Dubai Desert Classic. Now, for any of you out there scratching your head and asking, well, who is Paige Spirinac? She's essentially a social media star who plays golf at a much higher level than I do. She was given a wild card a couple of years back to the Omega Dubai Ladies Masters. She returned last year for that. She is someone who I think's garnered 1.2 million followers on Instagram. That, I think, alone puts her in the top 10 of golfers, whether you're male or female. But she's coming back to become official starter for the men's event. Thoughts on this? I know Robbie Greenfield lost it. He lost the plot on Thursday night about this. He's not happy. He's an old fuddy-duddy. He's a bit of a traditionalist. Thoughts?
I've heard of it, actually. We obviously know of Paige Spirinac from coming to play in the Ladies Masters events in the last couple of years. And she is a Instagram sensation, I guess it's fair to say. Just giving Dale Gordon a bit of briefing on Paige Spirinac. And I don't see the relevance. I'm not sure why. I get it. I understand why you want to find ways to make the sport more interesting. And again, we talk about being more relevant. But I'm not sure I'm convinced of the reasons why she's even involved in the male tournament at all, really. Yeah. If she's involved in the ladies' tournament as an invitation, or she's coming to do some promotional appearances or do some clinics with the kids, that's great. But I'm not sure of the relevance or the reasoning behind why she would be a starter in the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. Doesn't make sense to me.
Dale, I mean, you're looking a little perplexed by it all as well. So she's official starter.
I'll have to follow her, I think.
And that's the thing, an awful lot of people, and I think that's what the organisers of the particular tournament are looking to do. They want more people through the gates, and they're trying to be a little bit different in order to make it that little bit more appealing.
She's obviously quite pleasant on the eye, I should imagine. And the reason why you just said there is the fact that, you know, they probably won't get more people through the gate, you know, and if she's going to start it as well, then why not? Why not? You're looking at other sports. We know what's happened, like Arch just mentioned there, about cricket. You know, football's a little bit different. You know, I think there's enough within football anyway to maybe tweak it a little bit more. But yeah. I think that darts as well, Chris. I mean, look at the darts. I mean, you only have to look at how many thousands of people go to watch a game of darts. And, you know, we're talking about maybe...
The sport of darts.
The sport of darts, yeah. The sport of darts, I should say that. So why not? You know, I think that there's areas where... We're trying to look at areas with regards to golf, and Dubai seems to be the place, you know, in the UAE that likes to try something a little bit different. So why not?
I think there'll be an awful lot of people out there, and let us know on 4001 your thoughts on this, who will probably be saying the exact same thing. Yeah. Why not? Doesn't harm anyone.
But
let's
Chris, I'd go. Now, that's the first I've heard of, and I said, you know, I would be curious to know what it's all about. So I would go, you know, and see what the fascinations, shall I say, of the
Paige. Well, listen, let us know your thoughts. 4001, that was just a little story that caught our eye this past week. There's an awful lot that caught our eye over the course of the past 7 days. It really has been a busy 7 days. One of the other stories that I'm keen to get your boys' thoughts on is a certain Nick Kyrgios, who some people out there think that he is very good for tennis, that it's personality, it's someone being himself, it's not robotic, it's him all warts and all. But we saw this past week Nick Kyrgios essentially storming off of court. He lost the first set in his match against Steve Johnson. He essentially said, I'm done, I'm walking off. Didn't tell the umpire, shook Steve Johnson's hand, having lost the first set 7-5, and walked off the court. He has been fined, unsurprisingly, for unsportsmanlike conduct after he quit, and that's what he did. He quit his first round match at the Shanghai Masters. Now, he was booed as he left the court, and I think we've got this clip in actual fact. Let us just hear what happened and the commentator's thoughts on this one.
Looks like he's done.
You need any help there, Andy?
Well, incredible. What is it about Shanghai?
That is Nick Kyrgios. I think we've got another one there.
Game and first set. Johnson. 7-2-6.
Looks like he's done.
You need any help there, Andy?
Well, incredible. What is it about Shanghai and Nick Kyrgios, Robbie? Emotions getting the better of him, and he's off. The next chapter of the Nick Kyrgios career unfolds.
Chapter indeed, and an edifying end to that. Nick Kyrgios, boys, I take it you're all keeping an eye on him. A lot of people do, and I know a lot of people are fans of Nick, despite the fact that he's been caught up in not one, not two, multiple controversial incidents. But walking off the court, there's no place for that, because the real losers in all of it are the fans who are paying good money to get into those tennis stadiums.
Well, they are. You are. And I think that, you know, it's more than anything, Chris, it's disrespectful to his opponent, you know. And I think that, you know, he is a talent. If you talk about the game moving in a different direction, having different characters with it, you know, I think years ago when we had Andre Agassi come on board, you know, come onto the game, and he was a little bit different as well. Just the way his demeanour, his look, everything about him. And I think Nick has got that about him as well. He's got that edge. But what he done, you know, with regards to walking off after the first set, is totally disrespectful to his opponent. Because really, obviously, you go into a match and you're focused and you prepare, right? And you don't know how that may have affected as well Johnson's, you know, the second round or the third round forward. You know, it might play on his mind a little bit. And I think that you're absolutely right. You know, the public pay good money to go and watch these events. And, you know, I just think that's an absolute totally out of order.
Is he becoming a caricature, Mark Archer? Is he in danger of just throwing his career away? Does it even, I mean, you're a proud Kiwi. Do you care if an Aussie throws away his career?
Oh, I care for sport, and I care for guys that should show up and give their best, and should appreciate the privilege to place in his profession. He's, you know, he's taking it, you know, he has a chance to, as a professional sportsman, as a young guy, to earn millions and millions of dollars. He's not a great role model. Look, he was fined $10,000, you know, for walking off the court. And, you know, to be fair, he earned $21,000 of prize money just in that event anyway. So does he care about $10,000 fine? No, because he earns multiple millions of dollars. It's just a bad example. It's a guy that's taken his place in the sport for granted. He should respect his opponent. He should respect the sport better. I've been on a rant like this before about him. But broadcasters pay a lot of money to broadcast the sport. And that pays for grassroots money to go back into associations. Sponsors pay a lot of money to see matches of tennis take place. And, of course, the public pay to front up and watch tennis. And when a guy like this has a bit of a tiffy fit with the umpire because he gets a couple of line calls that don't go his way, and then he feels free just to walk off the court and pack it in, it's not good enough. Yes. And look, the only way that these guys will learn is if you ban them. Ban them from matches. Ban them from Grand Slams. Make their sponsors basically take away their privileges, take away their sponsorships, because the guy's been a pain in the backside for the sport. And then they might start learning the lesson the hard way. But look, he did come out and he had an apology on social media. He says he was struggling with a stomach bug, and then he had a sore shoulder, and, you know, he didn't sleep well the night before. It's like, well, you know, you don't start the match then. Yeah. Don't. Anyway, I'd like to find ways to try and defend him, because I do like his style. I do like, he's got a bit different about him in this robotic age of tennis particularly, and of many other sports. He's got a personality. But sometimes the bad sides of that personality are tending to dominate the good sides, and it's hard to defend him time and time again when he does actions like this.
And before people text in saying, well, listen, we need personality, I'm all for personality in sport. I don't think there is enough personalities, and people will say, well, look at John McEnroe. He was hardly someone that you would look to be taking home to introduce to the family because of the nature that he was. But one thing about John McEnroe was, to my knowledge, he never tanked. He never purposely went out there to disrespect the sport. Yes, he was an animated character. Yes, he was incredibly passionate, Dale. But he went out there, and, okay, he wore his heart on his sleeve, but there was no tanking. There was no cheating of the public with John McEnroe. It was just, that was how he went about and got the best out of himself, was by being that little bit of a rogue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that Archer's mentioned there about sponsorship as well. And I think with John McEnroe, you look at, look, it's like in the riches of every sport now, footballers, you know, they're all multi-millionaires, without a doubt. You know, years ago, tennis players now, shall I say, the Roger Federers, the Andy Murrays of the world, you know, the sponsorship that is actually, you know, go their way, and the riches that they get, you know, it's fully deserved. But years ago, them riches weren't there, Chris. No. So, you know, John McEnroe having a bit of an off day and having a bit of a rant and a rave about it, you know, his passion and his desire to will to win, it was all part of his makeup. And I don't think that
Nick's just a petulant child.
Basically, he's had too much too soon, and it feels like
he's got to grow up, doesn't he?
Just walking off a tennis court is is acceptable.
Very quickly to you, Dale. You played football at the highest level, of course, Premier League and up in Scotland as well. Were any managers ever telling you not to be you? Did you have to conform to certain principles, or did your personality always was allowed to come out and to flourish in that team dressing room?
Yeah, I mean, you have to toe the line without a shadow of a doubt, Chris. But I think that, you know, everybody's character is different, you know, within the squad. And I think that's the reason why you become a very tight bond of, you know, between the group. Because then you're going to get your results. You'll be successful. I wasn't asked to change my character and my personality. You know, this is one of the reasons why the football club signed you. Because obviously...
Almost a chance there for Liverpool. Yeah, it's offside. Sorry, Dale. Go back to your point there, that you were allowed to be very much yourself.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But you knew that the guidelines were there as a player, and you know within the full stance, they say, you know, I've been at Norwich City or Glasgow Rangers, playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world as well. There was, you know, we knew when to have a good time, but also as well we knew also as well that it was time to work as well. Yeah. And we had one of the top managers, Walter Smith and Archie Knox, so obviously toe the line if any player stepped out of it.
Nick Kyrgios, he needs to grow up and grow up fast. Let us know your thoughts on that as well. 4001. When we come back, we're off to Italy. We're talking cycling, we're talking UAE Team Emirates.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
The game is always on down here at Barasti, and let us put you in the picture of some live sport now if we can. The big game on the big screen down here, the early kickoff in the English Premier League. It is Liverpool against Manchester United. 50 minutes on the clock, Dale, and it's fair to say Liverpool are pushing.
Very much so, Chris. I think that the half-time break obviously came at the right time for Manchester United going in at 0-0, but Liverpool certainly have, you know, still on the front foot. It was 5 minutes into the second half, and, you know, the occasion obviously with the new Kenny Dougley stand. I just see a picture there with Bobby Charlton as well in the stand as well at Anfield. But I think Liverpool, with that little magician Coutinho, he is the one who's trying to unlock the defence at Man, you know, the United defence. And I think that at the moment, Jurgen Klopp would be happy, the two managers, but I think that obviously they're attacking the Kop end as well, and I think you know what happens there with Liverpool. You know, the demands of the Kop, you know, expectancy.
Sucking it
in. You know,
in,
exactly. And but, you know, it's early stages of the second half, and it's still 0-0.
Yeah, we'll keep you up to date with that one. Also an early kickoff in the European Champions Cup. Mark Archer's got the details.
It's the first of five matches today in round one of the Champions Cup, the European Club Rugby Championship, and I can tell you after 31 minutes... in Dublin, it's Leinster 12, Montpellier 0. Two tries, one to Joey Carberry and Josh van der Flyer with the second try for Leinster. So it's been a good start by the home team. They lead Montpellier 8 minutes before half-time, 12 points to 0.
Let's just give you an update as well in the tennis. It is semi-final day over in Shanghai. I can tell you that Rafa Nadal, 6 titles already in 2017. He beat Nick Kyrgios in the China Open last weekend. He will be in another final. He defeated earlier today Marin Cilic 7-5, 7-6, taking that second set tiebreak 7-3. I can tell you as well that Juan Martín Del Potro currently on court against Roger Federer. An early break to Juan Martín Del Potro. He leads that first set by 4-2. For now, though, we're going to talk all things cycling if we can, because we've been keeping a very close eye over the course of the past few months on UAE Team Emirates, doing wonderful things in the world of cycling. We saw Rui Costa successful at the Abu Dhabi Tour a little earlier this year. I'm delighted to say that joining us live on the line from Italy, it is the UAE Team Emirates team manager, Carlo Cerroni, and Carlo joins us now live. A very good afternoon to you, Carlo.
Thank you to you. Thank you to you. Bye, all.
Thank you very much for joining us live on the line all the way over from Italy. And I've got to start, Carlo, by just asking you, just how happy, how content are you with the season thus far for UAE Team Emirates? I know we're at the back end of the year, but over the piece, are you delighted? Are you happy with what you've achieved this year?
Yeah, I think the season was good. We were in our first year of activity. And we got an important victories, I think. It's never easy to start in this way, but this is a good sign of the job that was made with great passion and professionalism. I think that the best moment of the season for all of us was the victory in Abu Dhabi Tour by Rui Costa. And so this was also a great moment to stay with our sponsors and with our fans there in UAE. And it was just like staying in a special days in a family.
And what about frustrations,
I think,
Carlo?
Also, yeah,
just what about frustrations? I mean, it's obviously has been a successful, as you rightly point out, the first year for UAE Team Emirates. It's a learning experience over the course of the past 9 months or so. But in terms of frustrations, any that stand out for you? Any perhaps races that you maybe didn't deliver where there was an expectation that you would?
Yeah, probably we weren't enough lucky to get more victories. I can count now 22 second places during the season, so maybe other victories must be done, but cycling is also this, and it's not a mathematical sport, so it's also good that it's like that.
Carlo, what's next and what's coming up next for Emirates Team UAE, and how is planning for next season coming along? Any new riders you can discuss with us here on Dubai Eye?
Yeah, at the moment I can confirm that we will have with us the European champion, Alexander Kristoff, and also vice world champion behind Peter Sagan. He's a great sprinter, and he also is really good for the Belgian classics, such as Roubaix or Flanders. And we have signed also Daniel Martin, that is, for me, one of the most consistent riders in the world as performance, and he's also a great stage races rider. He finished this year at the Tour de France at sixth place, and despite a terrible crash where was involved also Richie Port, and he's also good for Amstel, Liège, all the classics in Ardennes. And we are really close, I think, really, really close with Fabio Aru, that is an amazing climber, one of the best in the world, if all is okay with the health. And he was there fighting with Chris Froome in this Tour de France. So I think that for next season we will have good guys to improve our team and our results.
Yeah, that is incredible. Just listening to the names that you've mentioned there, you are, it's fair to say, creating a bit of a dream team, Carlo, for next year. I want to touch, if we can, on Daniel Martin. Interesting article I read a little earlier this week about him talking about turning down Team Sky in order to join UAE Team Emirates. He said that he was going to UAE Team Emirates to become a full-on leader. Talk to us about Dan Martin. What strengths and what will he bring to UAE Team Emirates, in your opinion?
But at first with his agent and with Daniel, there was a good feeling. We were in the same line. He proposed him a role of captain, leader in our team. And this is the first thing. And the second thing is that Daniel Martin was really excited about the project behind the team, so the development of the bikes there in UAE. And also about who is in the team. So these three things make Daniel decide to sign with us.
And in terms of the targets for next year, given the fact there you've said that Fabio Aru could well be joining the team as well, what are the targets? Is it success in those majors, the likes of the Vuelta, the likes of the Giro d'Italia, of course the big one, the Tour de France? How realistic is it that we could see some big wins on those three Grand Tours for UAE Team Emirates next year?
Yeah, I think that the goals are these. No, we have good guys like Aru for the Giro, probably, but we will see with them. No, we have to do the first training camp together and discover the ideas of these new guys. But sure, with Fabio Aru, with Daniel Martin, the goals are especially the big tours. And the goal for next season is also to improve the situation in the UCI World Team rankings, that is really important for us, for the team, and we hope to go inside the top 10 for next season, and year by year, step by step, the goal is to become one of the best three teams in the world.
I've got no doubt that you will go on to do that, no question about it. Fantastic vision from all involved at UE Team Emirates. Before I let you go, Carlo, I want to just ask as well about the growth of cycling over here in the Middle East. We see the Dubai Tour come online. We've seen the Abu Dhabi Tour as well, won, of course, by Rui Costa earlier this year. Investment as well coming in from the likes of Emirates in cycling as well. It's becoming massive over here, isn't it? And it must be incredibly an incredible achievement for you to be involved in that.
Yeah, for us, for all the team, it's a great responsibility. We know this, and also an immense honor for all the team. We start the races, and we know who we represent, and we do our best to make our sponsor and also all the people there in UAE proud of us. We strongly believe that in the project of sport development, and also to increase cycling in the country, we can have maybe a good role. For example, all of those that are facing this wonderful sport, we want to make them follow us. And who know, in future, maybe one day we discover a young talent that wearing our race kit could get important victories with the team from his country. And this would be amazing also for us and for all the UAE.
Yeah, we look forward to that. It is exciting. That prospect alone is very, very exciting. The thought of an Emirati on the top of that podium, perhaps one day at the Tour de France. Listen, Carlo, you've been an absolute superstar. We thank you so much for your time this afternoon. The very best of luck in the off-season as well. I know that's coming up, and of course we'll then be back on our bikes, and we're looking forward to the Abu Dhabi and Dubai tours later in the year, it's the start of next year. For now though, Carlo, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much to you and for your time.
That is the voice there of UE Team Emirates team manager Carlo Cerrone. Just a word on that, Arch, a lot of investment has gone in from both Dubai Sports Council and Abu Dhabi Sports Council. Abu Dhabi Tour, I believe, is going up a stage. It's going up to five stages from next year. Dubai, we know, is already five stages. Cycling is becoming a bit like golf on the calendar over here in the UAE. It's becoming very intrinsic and very integral to what we're trying to do.
Yeah, the growth of cycling's been amazing in the last 10 years since I've lived in Dubai. And you see it come through from all levels, from people that just love to be, you know, cycle in their weekends and get out there and put some K's under the belt, through to the advent of in the last sort of 4 to 5 years of the Dubai Tour, which has been very successful. And then of course it's the UCI World Tour is what Abu Dhabi is now, and going to five stages, you're correct there. So it's the growth and all the addition earlier this year of Team UAE Emirates. Now the UAE has a professional side. You've got two tours here in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, and then you've got the massive tracks that have been built for cyclists like yourself and anyone that wants to get a bike out there.
I just need to learn how to change gears.
You need to change gears. But, yeah, it's a massive growth success story, really, from community participation at all levels and all sort of ages through to the very elite professional guys that we see come here in February. I think both tours are on. And it's like we have in golf with the Middle East Swing. We now have a Middle East Swing for cycling as well. I'm not sure what the acronym is there, but we've seen them come to Qatar and also Oman and then now Dubai and Abu Dhabi. So it's a very successful movement throughout the Middle East, and no more better so than in Dubai and in Abu Dhabi.
I think they call it a Middle East cycle, I think is what it is, but there's no doubt that cycling is booming over here and it will continue to do so. We wish UAE Team Emirates all the very best, and as I say, we will be in touch with them throughout the coming weeks, months and hopefully years as they build up towards, who knows, one day, just maybe, winning a grand tour the likes of the Tour de France, the Vuelta a España or the Giro d'Italia. When we come back, we'll put you in the picture with the early kickoff in the Premier League. I should point out, we're yet to see the first goal. Liverpool, though, are in the ascendancy. We'll give you an update on that. We're going to be live to the UK after 5 as well. We're going to be catching up with Adam Bridge. He is your commentator for Crystal Palace against Chelsea a little later this evening. We're also going to be in the UK to talk to one of our good friends, Ian Walker. He was the skipper for the Abu Dhabi Ocean Racing when they won the last Volvo Ocean Race. Would you go and believe it? The Volvo Ocean Race is around again. We're going to be doing all of that and much more between now and 6 o'clock.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
We are live coming to you from the rooftop down here at Barasti. The place is packed as well. A big day of club football. The early kickoff is Liverpool against Manchester United. We're fast approaching the final 20 minutes or so of this one. And Dale Gordon, he's got the details.
Continued pressure, Chris, from Liverpool. And I think that Emre Can can't believe he's actually missed a glorious opportunity at the Kop end. It was whipped in from the right-hand side. And Emre Can found himself between the two Man United defenders. I got a good contact on it, but probably got too much of a good contact, because sometimes when they come off your shin, they go in the top corner. But this particular occasion, it didn't. He got a good contact and it blazed it over the crossbar as well. And you'd see the frustrations as well as Jurgen Klopp. The camera's obviously, you know, streamed into Jurgen Klopp. He was so frustrated. He knows what a fantastic opportunity that was. And then also as well, Coutinho as well, the little magician on the edge of the box as well, just inside the United area. He got clipped as well, and it's been showed about four or five times since then as well, Chris, and I think that they would find themselves a little bit unfortunate that they didn't actually get a penalty in that one. That'll be a talking point after the game. A couple of changes as well from the substitutes' point of view. Manchester United, Mourinho has realised, obviously, that Liverpool have the front foot here, so he's made a couple of changes. Mkhitaryan's come off, and he's brought on Jesse Lingard, and also as well, like for like as well, that Manchester United have been doing that all season. He's brought off Martial, and also Marcus Rashford is on.
Yeah, 67 minutes gone then. Liverpool 0, Manchester United 0. We will keep you across that between now and the full-time whistle. We're also building up to our 6pm game, our featured match on this particular station, Dubai 103.8. It is Crystal Palace, winless, goalless this season. They take on the champions Chelsea at Selhurst Park. And then from 8.30 this evening, you will get Watford against Arsenal. It is the only station in the Middle East, or certainly in the UAE anyway, that you will get your Premier League football. Keep it locked on this station then. So if you're not at a TV a little later this evening, then make sure you are on the radio, keeping all up to date with your Premier League football. I want to just turn our attention, if we can, to US sport. It is, it's a busy old time over there. The NBA gets away. It tips off next Wednesday?
Tuesday. Well, it's probably Wednesday morning, early UAE time. Yeah, NBA season gets underway, of course. There's two matches to start the season. They're both crackers as well. And then you've got the Boston Celtics travelling to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They are predicted to be the top two teams in the Eastern Conference. So it's interesting to see how they go head-to-head. Cleveland Cavaliers, of course, rebuilt a new super team. Dwayne Wade has come into that mix there. It looks like they're building behind, you know, LeBron James, of course, have lost Kyrie Irving, who has gone off and doing his trade elsewhere. And then in the other matches, Houston, who have stacked up this year with Chris Paul, yeah, but taking up with James Harden in the backcourt. Is it the best backcourt in the NBA is the question. Well, they'll be in San Francisco taking on the NBA champions, the Golden State Warriors. So they're the first two matches of the NBA season. It all gets underway early hours on Wednesday morning UAE time. Of course, we're into round six this weekend of the NFL. And of course, Chris, NBL, Major League Baseball, we're well into the playoffs now. All roads lead to the 2017 World Series.
Indeed it is. I just want to touch on the NFL very quickly. I've been keeping an eye on it from afar, watching my games on a Sunday evening. Fair to say the Patriots, reigning Super Bowl champions, pushed all the way by Tampa Bay Buccaneers last week, Arch. And on defence, they're not quite up to it for me. I've watched them and I just think that this year, I know a lot of people, you write off the Patriots, you write off Brady and Belichick at your peril, but these early few weeks, although you know is more than most, that in NFL ebbs and flows and things can change you the more that you get through the weeks and you play together, right?
Yeah, defence is important and it's tough to keep defensive units together in the NFL, but if one man can do it, it's Bill Belichick. He's a coaching guru, he's a genius, and he gets the best out of players and he comes to the fore. But what they do say, though, Chris, is the old adage that offense wins matches, but championship, yeah, is won by good defenses. And the Patriots will have to sort out their problems because they are leaking too many points. Of course, offensively, you know, you've got Tom Brady, who's going to lead them around the gridiron there, and they'll come up often in tight situations. He'll be the man that does it for them. But defensively, they'll have to sort it out. Kansas City Chiefs are the surprising team that's, yeah, got away to a flying start this season, and just let's wait and see till that sort of run comes to an end, though. But it's such a level playing field in the NFL. Everyone's beating each other week in, week out. As they say, any given Sunday, you can get the result going your way. But at the moment, it's the Kansas City Chiefs leading the pace there.
And I just want to touch, if we can, on the Major League Baseball. Cleveland Indians, what a shocker that was. 2-0 up to New York Yankees and eventually lose?
Yeah, never write off the Yankees. And, of course, the Yankees have got past Cleveland, who were the dominant team towards the back end of the season. Last night it was game one, so we're at the championship series games, Chris. We're at the American League Championship. The winner will go on to the World Series, and we've got the National League Championship Series starting tomorrow. Just to talk about game one of the ALCS, it was the Houston Astros who are taking on the Yankees. It was a 2-1 win to the Astros last night. It's a best of seven series. They now lead the series 1-0. It was a win for Dallas Keuchel, who pitched 7 innings, 10 strikeouts. So let's just listen to the highlights with the Houston Astros taking on the New York Yankees, game one of the ALCS.
Aaron Judge and the Yankees open up the American League Championship Series in Houston against Jose Altuve and the Astros. And Dallas Keuchel will look to keep his perfect playoff record intact against Masahiro Tanaka.
Hard hit. What a play, Altuve. He can hit. He can feel. Altuve. Cutters play. Cut off. 1-0 Houston.
The pitch. And that's lined up the middle. Base hit. Correa shots around third. Hicks will not get off the throw. He bobbled it, and the Astros lead it 2-0. Gurriel with an RBI.
Well, even though it's not first base, there is a base open. It's third.
3-2. And Judge lines this over the leap of Correa in the left field. Around third and coming home is Bird. The throw to the plate by Gonzalez. And one hop. The tag by McCann. Bird is out. Inning over. A perfect strike from Marwin Gonzalez. On one hop to McCann.
1-2. Swing and a miss. Struck about on the slider in the dirt. Picked out of the dirt by McCann. Here's the 1-2. Swing and a miss. Struck about on a slider down and away.
Swing and a miss. That's 10 for Keuchel. Puts him in rarefied air now.
Giles set the 1-1. And that's drilled deep to right field. Ball is hooking down the line, and it is off the foul pole. A home run for Greg Bird, and it is 2-1 Astros. The Yankees are down to their final strike. 1-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out on the slider, and that is the ball game.
Ken Giles allows a solo homer in the ninth inning, but nothing else. Houston wins 2-1. Dallas Keuchel racks up a playoff career-high 10 strikeouts and outduels Masahiro Tanaka in the postseason for the second time. Keuchel is 4-0 in four career playoff starts.
That was Game 1 of the American League Championship Series. Houston Astros defeated the New York Yankees 2-1, so they lead the best of seven series 1-0. The Game 1 of the National League Championship Series gets underway tomorrow morning UAE time. It's the reigning World Series champions, the Chicago Cubbies, traveling to LA to take on the Dodgers. The big question everyone is asking is, who will pitch for Chicago in Game 1 versus the ace for LA, Clayton Kershaw?
How do you turn around in 48 hours and get ready?
I'm not sure how you do this, because their first four starters in the rotation either pitched yesterday or today.
Yeah.
So they're not quite sure who's going to pitch in Game 1 against Clayton Kershaw on the road. This is the problem. Now, John Lester pitched in relief yesterday. He threw 55 pitches. My guess is he will walk in and say, I'm taking the ball for Game 1. They could pitch John Lackey. They could pitch, I guess, Quintana, who pitched tonight, but very little. But to not know who your Game 1 starter is going to be, because you just used up all your starters, speaks to exactly what it took for the Cubs to win this series.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.